This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with James McMurray, CEO of Threat Hunter AI. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here. My name is James McMurray. I go by Jim. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard. I started ThreatHunter.ai 17 years ago in the hopes of bringing real cybersecurity to the masses. What I mean by that is I looked around and saw that a lot of other firms were doing similar things, but charging a lot of money for doing what I would consider basic things, basic services to their customers. I felt that that was unfair. I really wanted to be the equalizer, to bring the services up and the cost down and give that security layer to every organization, regardless if you have 10 people or 100,000 people.
I'd like to say I'm shocked about the thought that the industry would charge people more than it needs to for delivering services that are below par. I've been around the business a long time, but there's no shock here.
When you look around and realize what exactly you're getting from some of the other vendors out there when it comes to managed detection and response, and you dig into what they're offering, you understand that for the price level, you don't get much. You do definitely get a checkbox. You do get the ability to tell your assessor. You do have someone or something looking at your logs. But whether or not you're actually getting any value out of that, that's a totally different story.
Like you, I'm also a veteran. One of the things we've seen in the last 5 years in particular is a lot of awareness among companies that veterans bring a whole different aspect, particularly around cybersecurity. While companies are complaining that there's not enough graduates, that the cost of employing people is high, yet they're not willing to take on and train people, what they have found is veterans bring something very special. Now, you're a huge supporter of veterans, both on Discord and for your own company. Why is it you think that veterans are so sought after at this moment in security?
I would say that not just cybersecurity, a veteran brings a lot of skills with them that the average college recent graduate doesn't have. That is an actual work ethic and an actual discipline. When you graduate from college and you haven't had those first jobs yet, you haven't developed your own discipline and your own work ethic. Veterans have that as a whole. The other part is the ability to work within teams and to take control of situations. Again, I'm going to compare the veteran to a recent college grad. A veteran is going to have the ability to quickly take on a role. Even if he or she doesn't know the actual topic, they will take on that role. They will go figure it out. They will lead a team. They will work as part of a team. A recent college graduate would get lost. They wouldn't understand the complexities of dealing with other people. And I think that's a big, big plus. Threat Hunter has been part of the SkillBridge program for a number of years now. In the U.S., SkillBridge, for those that don't know, it's a U.S. government program where in the last 6 months of your contract in the military, you can sign up to work as an intern for a wide range of organizations, not just in cybersecurity, real estate, sales, etc. During that 6 months, a SkillBridge organization has to train you and get you introduced to the industry. That way you can decide as a veteran whether or not you want to be a threat hunter or you want to be a real estate salesperson. It gets you an opportunity to understand what are the needs and requirements of the industry that you're interested in. Through SkillBridge, we've kept a large number of the people that have gone through our program. What we've seen recently is the realization of our competitors and us that college grads in general, while they may have great book knowledge, they don't have a basic understanding of IT administration, of networking, and they haven't been part of teams that have supported that. Versus if I'm getting somebody who maybe has only been in the U.S. Navy for 4 years, but he was an IT person. He's done active directory administration. He's worked as part of teams. He's deployed on a vessel or overseas. He's worked in odd situations that average people have not before. I find that those kinds of people are much more adaptable to our needs and requirements.
I kind of look at it in another way. We're self-starters. When we're faced with a problem, we solve it. We get on with it. We don't need to be told how to solve a problem. We're used to military equipment breaking at the worst possible time and having to get out a bit of duct tape or something else and put it back together. We do the same when we're facing problems in business.
In the Coast Guard, we always had the saying, we always did more with less. And that was a continual statement from everybody. The expectation of, hey, if something broke, but we don't have money to replace it with, we have to go figure out how to fix it ourselves.
The other thing when I look at veterans is when something goes wrong and you've got an incident, you don't just run 9 to 5. You get in there and you work the problem until it's solved. When we look outside of security in a lot of other roles, we're in a world where people want to change how they work. They want less work, more play. Now, that's a good idea. But sometimes you have to be situationally aware. And this is, I think, what veterans bring.
Right.
How do we explain this to employers? Because on one hand, I see employers wanting veterans. On the other, I see them worried that veterans will take over and just get on with the job without listening to management. They're also worried a little about maybe the baggage we bring and about how they manage us. As an employer yourself, having worked with many other employers and having got people into employment, what would you say to employers?
If you're looking at veterans and recent college grads, when you hire a recent college grad, you don't know how well they're going to work in a team. You don't know what baggage they may be bringing with them as well. I think they're a bigger unknown than a veteran is. A veteran, you know the constraints. You know that this person was active duty for 4 years. They lived on board a ship, or they were stationed in Germany or in South Korea. You have their DD-214. You know exactly where they've been, what they've done. You've seen their resume, and you know their skill set. HR departments shouldn't be afraid of hiring veterans. Now, to your point, I don't think they'll override. I've never seen something like that before, but I have seen where someone will raise their hand and say, hey, Jim, I understand what you're saying. I'm going to do what you're saying, but I do think there may be a better way of doing it. And that's a typical veteran. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to say, that sounds great, but, you know, sir, there is a different way of doing this and it may be better. And employers need to understand that that will occur versus a recent college grad, maybe even someone who's had their first job someplace and then looking for another job. They're not used to raising their hand and saying, I'm going to do it that you're saying, but I do think there may be a better way of doing it.
But one of the reasons that college grads are attractive to organizations is they leave with a degree. We know that many of us leave the armed forces without a degree. Fortunately, these days, they do leave with knowledge of computer systems, because when I left, there were no computer systems apart from mainframes doing payroll. But importantly, many are leaving now with training budgets that they can spend. But often they don't know where to spend them or how to spend them to get the right result. How do we educate veterans on how best to use that money? Here in the UK, we're lucky we've got an organisation called TechBets which does that. And it's also closely aligned with a number of the resettlement programmes here. That needs to be there. But we also need to get to the veterans themselves and not just the people running the programmes. How do we do that?
In the US, we have a different problem. We have so many organizations out there that say they offer training to veterans and so many different government programs that can be very confusing. We're not lacking in opportunities. What we're lacking is how to guide those veterans appropriately to individual needs and to help them decipher, hey, you should be doing VRE on this, not your GI Bill. Or you should be applying for scholarships over here and not use your GI Bill yet. Or use your GI Bill and here are the programs that you should be looking at. That guidance is the missing component. There are lots of organizations that claim to guide veterans in the U.S. A lot of them charge money. I have a personal friend whose son was in the Army. He just got out, served 4.5 years. He doesn't have any guidance whatsoever. There is that program in the military to reintegrate them back into society. But all they'd said was, here's what a resume should look like. The template was from the 1980s. And just go on LinkedIn and monster.com and send them out to thousands of people. You'll eventually get a job and go to your community college and go get schooling there. That's the guidance that they are given. That was one of our goals, my goal and Bill's goal. Bill Kimball, founder of CDT, when we started VetCon, which was not only to have a place during DEF CON once a year for all of us to get together, but since we're getting so many of us veterans together, was to provide an avenue, a discussion area to help guide those veterans to say, hey, I've done these programs, they were crappy, or I've done these, they were awesome. This is what everyone should be doing and why, and this is my success from it. Learning from others. And the key part about that is there's no cost involved. What I'm seeing with my friend's son is the fact that even the college counselors he's talking to don't know exactly what programs he should be using and when. Should he be using his GI Bill first? Should he not use his GI Bill and just take community college classes, which are pretty inexpensive, and do his lower level education first, then transfer, and then use his GI Bill? There's so many components involved there. And then the other part is getting certifications. What certification should I get? How much is it going to cost? Should I do a boot camp? Should I do the course and just take the exam? That's all part of why I started VetCon with Bill, is to try and help others in that fashion.
Now, I'm very fortunate. I'm in your Discord server for VetCon. I'm also in the TechBets Discord server in the UK. And what amazes me is two totally different organizations, different sides of the Atlantic. But the one big thing they have in common is it's veterans helping other veterans. When somebody comes in and they don't know what they want to do, or they know they want to get into cybersecurity, but they don't know how or what part they want to get into, I see other vets stepping up and saying, okay, well, what were you thinking of? What do you enjoy? What has got your interest? And suddenly, other vets with experience in those sectors jump in to help. Did you envisage that from VetCon's perspective, that it would be as successful as it has been in that sense?
I really hoped it would be, and I'm very happy that it's gotten this far. And we have over 1,100 members on Discord. Last year at DEF CON, we had close to 3,000 people show up to the VetCon meetup. I do think we are making a good impact. In 2024, my hope is to make an even bigger impact by a few things that we're adding on.
I want to touch on one of those. You're giving out bursaries to help veterans get ahead. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
I've always had this need or want and desire to help others, me, myself personally. I joined the Coast Guard because of it. I support the military units after I'm out. I go out of my way to assist others that have gone through similar life issues as myself. Part of that was the impetus for starting VetCon. On top of that, this coming year, we want to start giving out mini scholarships to help those veterans who don't want to burn their GI Bill, or they don't have a GI Bill available to them for one reason or another, by helping them up to $500 per month to take tests, to take training, to get books, even if it's just for basic subsistence to help them. And this is per person, but it isn't limited to a single person. Our plan is we want to help about 1,000 people in the next 12 months through this program. It isn't from Threat Hunter and it isn't from CDT. This is from myself personally to try and help everyone out there that needs assistance as much as possible. My goal is to find those veterans in need and to pull them up and to make them part of our group, to make them feel wanted. When you're in the military, it's that camaraderie. It's that group feeling. It's that you're in this together. A lot of times when people leave the military, they feel lost. They feel very challenged and they don't know who to turn to. I don't want that to happen to anybody. That's the reason why I'm doing this year.
But how are you going to find these people, Jim, when we leave? Do we stay connected to our buddies? We stay connected to our units through whatever social networks we built. But that's not all of us. There's a number who, for various reasons, and it can be associated with their service or it can be mental health, who fall through the cracks and they get lost. When I left, and I've always been open about this, I left because I had significant alcohol issues. And it took me a long time to find my way back to the people I knew in the military and back into military circles. I'm really glad I did, because it does make a difference to me. But I also did that in an age where everything wasn't on computer, where people weren't as broken as they are by social media. So how are you going to do your outreach to find those people? because there's only so many people you can pick up from VetCon itself at some point. And while this sounds wrong, you've almost got to go on a recruiting drive to find them.
Besides VetCon, besides word of mouth, like many other people, I go to the Veterans Administration. That's my healthcare provider. I'm there 2 times a month. Putting marketing there at the VA, I'm an extroverted introvert. I really am an introvert, but I force myself to be extroverted, to walk around, to talk to people, to introduce myself, and to find out more about a person, and to offer these kinds of things, and if not for them, but for others that they may know. I have colleagues that are doing the same thing for me as well. On top of that, I'm still very heavily tied into the Coast Guard community itself. I always like to call it my first alma mater. I'm very well tied into that community across the globe. And that's part of my marketing team in a way. In 2023, I was made an honorary chief petty officer in the Coast Guard. I'm now a full member of the Chief's Mess. And that has opened a lot of doors for me in communicating around the globe these opportunities. And now I get calls 2 o'clock in the morning from a Coast Guard member who's in the UK, who's getting out and needs help and doesn't know what to do.
When I came out of the military and into civilian life, a lot of companies still had typing pools and senior secretaries. And trust me, they basically ran companies. Bosses were often there just to sign bits of paper. The senior ranks mess, irrespective of Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Marines, whatever, is exactly the same. Senior ranks messes make the decisions, and junior officers in particular. Well, we both know they're there to do what they're told.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, that never goes away. So how do you effectively exploit that? Because it's not just about using our networking to get the message out. Many of these people have other skills, management skills, man management skills, soft skills that we don't talk about a lot in the military. We don't necessarily realize we're doing it, but if you're an effective NCO, senior NCO, or any other effective leader in the military, you have to have those skills. How do you plan to bring those people into your orbit to help with this training?
That's a great question. When I talk about helping others, it isn't just specific to cybersecurity. Of course, I'm biased a little bit. I want to find the best people possible to be part of Threat Hunter. That's really an underlying desire. But I help a lot of people who have no desire and no knowledge of cybersecurity. They were a damage controlman, or they were a grunt, an 0311 in the Marine Corps, and their desire is to be a security guard, and they don't know where to go. I can leverage my contacts that I have because of my age and the people I've met over the number of years. I can leverage my friend who works for Customs and Border Patrol and say, hey, do you know of anyone that would have a need for someone like this? Where would you send this person to? What training should they go through? I look at myself and Bill and others, and you included, as part of my superconductor network. I'm able to find the right people. And if I don't know someone, I know someone who will know someone. That's what LinkedIn is supposed to have been 20 years ago. That's exactly what I want this to be. I want it to be that we're all connected. We all can help each other, not just cybersecurity, but in every area.
One of the challenges across all militaries in the world is budgets and downsizing. We're seeing headcount numbers drop, but we're also seeing more automation of technology. We're almost, in some ways, looking at a point as to how do we not have people on the front line? How do people fight a war remotely? But if we fight remotely, we lose that connectedness. How do we build that?
I have not given thought to that, but I see where you're going with this. How far into the future is the cold disconnectedness? My understanding right now at an Air Force base in Nevada, they launch drones that are not even there in Nevada. They're in Afghanistan or they're in the Middle East. And then they turn it over to a remote pilot over there. And then they get handed back. What sort of unit cohesion is there? This person who spends 4 to 6 hours in a box with one other person and they come out, is that unit cohesion? Is there any feeling of connectedness amongst others? I think we have something similar right now in the private sector. After COVID, we forced everybody to work from home. There are a number of people that are okay with that. They don't mind that, and they don't need that connectedness. But then there is a small group of people that desire and require that team feeling, that connectedness, that human touch, the human interaction in person. As a society as a whole, I think we are driving towards a disconnected civilization, disconnected from real life humanity and touch. That is a sad thing. Here I am, I'm sitting in my home office. You're sitting in your home office. All of my employees work remote. How often do I get to see all of my employees in one room at one time? It's been probably 4 years. And when you think about it, that is a sad thing.
But I come back to that connectedness. How do we keep it going? Remember when we all went to work from home back in 2020? Companies sent people home with no support mechanisms in place. They had no idea how they were going to deal with this. Many simply thought they'd just get people to throw up a Teams window or a Zoom window or Slack or something else, and that would recreate the office environment. But many of those people didn't really have deep connections in offices. They got up, they went to work, they came home, they got on with their lives. Do you think that from a veteran's perspective, that's something else that we bring to the party, that we're able to cope with that being separated from people better than people who haven't served? We know how to keep those bonds. There are people I haven't spoken to for 20 years, but I know if I sit down on a call with them, it would be like 20 years haven't even passed.
Yes and no. That connectedness we had while we served lives within us because it meant something to us, because we lived it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The connectedness that you have isn't the same with a fellow employee. There isn't that we're in this together bond. There isn't the, oh my gosh, we haven't had fresh milk in 4 months because the ship stores are depleted, and remembering the last port call we had together. There isn't that connectedness in the private sector. As a veteran, we're more used to stuff like that, where we could go, hey, maybe a year without seeing our family even. But when we come back, it's just like we had never left. We know that we could call up any of our friends from 20 years ago and they'd be at our doorstep within minutes. That's very different than a private citizen working for a private employer who maybe spent 3 years at Yahoo in the very beginning and now works at Megacorp. He can't call somebody from Yahoo. That person's long gone there working someplace else. There isn't that connectedness that we as veterans have. Or in similar situations, the Peace Corps. People who go off for a year or two in the Peace Corps, they have a similar connectedness to the people that went with them. Veterans and people who have done things like Peace Corps members as a whole work remotely better and with less interaction than others can. I do know of a few of my family friends that were sent home. One of them is an HR director for a large organization. And they're hating life. It's been 3 years. They actually closed down their office. They don't have a physical office anymore. Everyone's spread across the U.S. and there are no company functions anymore. They don't really work for an organization. She does a few things during the day, feels very disconnected, and is like, what am I even doing?
One of the things I have noticed in the last few years in particular is the high incidence of entrepreneurship among the veteran community, and particularly in cybersecurity. But maybe that's because I'm more connected into that community than I am into construction or other industries. How do you see it? You've built a thriving business. You're giving back as part of that. Are you finding that people who've gone out on their own, who are veterans, need more support in being entrepreneurs? Or do you think it's that ability to just get on and do it that enables them to be that new group of business makers?
I'll tell you a little secret. I have a couple different personas, as I call them. I am this entrepreneur, cybersecurity, veteran business owner guy, but here I sit on my mini ranch. I have 15 horses and we're heavily involved in the equine industry because of that. We go to a lot of different rodeos and we see a lot of different veterans in the Western / equine sports, a lot of veterans. I would say a lot more veterans there than in cybersecurity. I see quite a lot of these veterans starting businesses, from a guy who's making leather goods. He's making saddles. Just decided one day this is something he's great at. And he went and bootstrapped it, and now suddenly he's making 20 saddles every 3 months. That's a great little business. Another guy, he's selling koozies and mugs that are equine specific, equine themed. There's a lot more in the Western sports than there are in the cybersecurity side. A lot more. It's easier in some respect to start a business in that kind of industry than it is on the cybersecurity side. Only because the issue comes back to scaling. It's an issue I have all the time. I sell myself. When I talk to a new customer, yes, I have an organization called Threat Hunter. I have a whole bunch of people that work at Threat Hunter. But if I'm brought on a call and the customer says, oh, I really love Jim, I want Jim. Suddenly I've sold myself, but how do you scale Jim? That's a common problem. If there was a 20-year veteran in the U.S. Navy, he's an IT guy, he gets out, he's super smart, he's going to go start a business. Okay, you can get customers, but how do you scale that? You're always selling yourself. You have to get out of that mindset and you have to hire people that are better than you and promote them and show them to the world so you're scaling together.
But again, isn't that part of the soft skills we learned in the military? We learn how to be part of a team, how to manage and how to work with other people.
I would say yes, but when you're that guy who just gets out of the military and you have this great idea and you go around and you're trying to get your first customers, you're selling yourself. And then suddenly you're in that trap of you can't scale yourself anymore. Versus when you sell something like a saddle, you're selling the quality of a product, a physical product, and not the individual. It's easier in that respect to scale those kinds of businesses than it is a cybersecurity business. Because, and it goes back to, we do have an issue in cybersecurity finding people with the right skill set and the ability to communicate. Those two components are key when it comes to cybersecurity. I can find people that can communicate but don't have the skill set, and I can find people who have a skill set but can't communicate. As a business, I don't have the time. If you're high end, I don't have the time to train you on either of those two things.
Okay. So to you, what is easiest to teach? Is it skills or is it communication?
That really depends on the person. If I see that you can communicate and you have the ability to learn very fast, then I'm going to say communication is key and I can teach you what you need to know. But then again, that's still a cost I now have to spend either myself or somebody else to teach you. Flip it around the other way and I say, I have someone who has a great skill set. They've been doing this for 10 years, but they can't communicate and they can't write and they can't write reports. That's a really hard thing to teach. Being able to communicate eloquently to a customer at a Fortune 500 is very different than communicating to somebody that was a member of your team in the military. It's very different.
So we're almost out of time. Let me put you on the spot a bit. You're used to talking to people. Let's say you're stood in a room and you've got potential employers, some veterans, and some people about to leave the military. What would you say to those groups as to where they should each focus their next steps?
First, I would tell each of them as a whole, don't fear each other. Employers should not fear the veterans, and the veterans should not fear the employers. The employers need to look for those soft skills, as you just outlined, and the ability to learn quickly. On the veteran side, I would say that you need to research the roles that you want to do before you apply for something. Don't think that sending your resume out, listing all your certifications to 200 firms is going to get you any result. You have to treat it just like a good salesman would track down a new customer. The old days of blasting out 4,000, 5,000 emails a day are gone. You have to go, who do I want to be my customer? And as a veteran, you got to say, who do I want to have as my employer? What role do I actually want to have? Go and research what those roles actually mean, what requirements there are, and do I have those basic requirements fulfilled or not? Then when I go to send my resume to that employer, I'm going to outline exactly why I am perfect for this role. Here's exactly what I've done in my previous positions in the military and my skill set. Just by blasting out your resume on Indeed, yes, you're going to get a lot of people who are going to send you emails and want to have phone interviews. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a lot of wasted time on your part. You have to be hyper-focused on what is it you actually want to do. And that goes back to If you're still in the military, take advantage of SkillBridge. That will help you figure out what you want to do.
Jim, this has been brilliant. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.